The story goes that 70% of all change efforts fail, which means I'm sure many of you have experienced transformational change that failed to achieve its goals. While we can debate the precision of the figure, it is no doubt high. But is it really because we as human beings are that bad at doing change? Or are there factors that make it utterly intractable? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. In this inaugural episode, what I both wish to do is to talk a little bit about change and paradox, but also, in a roundabout way, talk a little bit about the type of organizations of which I'm most familiar, military organizations. And I will do this because I think it's important to explain the types of organizations that I am familiar with, of course, but to do so in a manner that compares and contrasts with the typical organizations that are studied in organization theories and management science. And the idea is that military organizations are a good case study in paradox. And what am I talking about with paradoxes and tensions? I draw from the work of Lusher and Lewis back in 2008, in which they presented a triad of paradoxes that appear to be commonly present within all organizations. And they describe three varieties of them: paradoxes of performing, paradoxes of belonging, and paradoxes of organizing. To summarize, the paradoxes of performing are those in which are present because of conflicting managerial demands. And an example that they give is a tension between pursuing increased productivity and fostering creativity. Productivity emphasizes things such qualities such as reliability and stability, whereas creativity and innovation can be rather disruptive. And so you can see that the two, pursuing the two simultaneously, which is kind of what the Lusher and Lewis are talking about, can present natural tensions that divide the organization and make change very difficult. Paradoxes of belonging are conflicting views of one's commitment to the group or to the company. So it's reflective of tensions between one's own self-interest or oneself and the interests of others or the collective as a whole. Paradoxes of organizing tend to exacerbate tensions between old and new, continuity and change, if you will. What they're focused on, of course, is that as the tensions arise, if you consider the tension between viewpoint A and viewpoint B, then naturally the tension will pit A against B, and so it comes viewed as a choice, A or B. Whereas what they wanted to do in their work and in the study is to try to change the conversation to something that's a little bit more A and B, which is to say, take this dialectic between the sides of the tension and find a synthesis that is potentially a solution to a nagging problem. That's certainly well and good, and the types of tension, or I should say the depth and severity of the tensions that they studied could very easily lend themselves to a good synthesis, a good solution. But what happens if the tension is basically inherent, ever-present, and persistent in an organization, such that no matter what change effort it performs or attempts to perform, the tension presents automatic barriers? Not only automatic barriers that pop up at the instance in which an organization is looking to exercise change, but that members of the organization are cognizant of the tension in advance, so that every single time a change problem starts to appear, everybody's already jockeying for position. Everybody's already aligned on one side or other of the tension. And so the getting a change effort off the ground that really exacerbates the tension becomes really difficult, because you're already starting from a point of embedded resistance from one camp or the other, or perhaps the solution will never be satisfactory. There will be half of the organization who buys the vision in toto and half of the organization that perhaps doesn't. Now, do these persistent tensions exist? This is where I can bring in my example of military organizations, because military organizations in Western-style democracies do have a lot of inherent persistent tensions. It's built into the character of the and the identity of the organizations. This is not to say that change is impossible. It just simply is to say that the tensions are ever present. And any time there's a significant transformational change, one can expect resistance or questions or issues concerning the vision formulation and the method or the ways in which the change is going to proceed. So everything from what to change, why to change it, how to change it, has to navigate some inherent tensions. So where do these tensions come from? Let me characterize military organizations as follows. And this is something that I studied in my work in defense management education at the at my institution, the U.S. Army War College. Militaries have four characteristics I think are really important. And you can contrast these with, say, commercial sector or any organization which you deal with. Militaries are very large, public sector, professional, preparedness organizations. Very large, public sector, professional, preparedness organizations. And let me just very briefly describe all of those four qualities, because I think they really do contrast with a number of organizations. Very large is pretty straightforward. I mean, when you consider the size of the military, the size of the U.S. Department of Defense as having well over 1 million people, possibly close to 2 million by the time you actually count everybody who's in some way affiliated with the organization. That by any measure, that's huge. By contrast, I mean, the literature that uses the term very large can basically characterize organizations that are about 10,000 people. And indeed, I can imagine that 10,000 would seem very large in comparison to many organizations that exist. So the scope is just so different in military organizations. You can imagine the complexity that it just inherently brings. Okay, public sector. In my experience with military officers, there are quite a number of them who are quick to point out that the military is not like a business. And that is true. In what way is the part of the question that deserves an answer. And the public sector character of militaries is very significant because it defines how it gets its resources and who it answers to. So how it gets its resources is very different from, you know, obviously a private sector. The private sector, if you're thinking a commercial firm, a typical commercial firm, the unit of analysis is the bottom line, the number of dollars, you know, revenues minus expenditures. And that's the basis upon which organization, you know, private sector organizations compare each other. In the public sector, the unit of analysis is the program. And by a program, that is not just the money that's allocated to the organization, but also the authorities to spend it. And they come together. So a government will, through legislation, in the United States anyway, will issue a program of a certain amount of dollars, and that the dollars are meant for a very specific purpose, and the organization has a year to spend that money. It can vary, you know, depending on the nature of the program, but typically the United States operates on an annual budget cycle, so a lot of programs are year to year. And so the measure of effectiveness or the measure of merit for a public sector organization is, do they in fact spend the money allocated for the purpose intended? And did they achieve the benefit? Because then, of course, if there's any misalignment of them, then it becomes basically a legal discussion for the next year's budget or for programming efforts further out to determine, okay, then what is the amount of money required to serve to provide this benefit for what have you? And so as a public sector organization, the military receives money for specific purposes, which could include facilities, operations and maintenance, training, purchasing new weapon systems, and it's all packaged in programs that says you'll spend this money for that particular purpose. This money is for a different purpose. And we kind of call that colors of money. And the important thing about that is that in order to move money from one program to another, it takes legislative action, in essence. Either that or it's authorities vested, provided that allow the military to move small amounts of money without having to go back to the legislature. So that's public sector. Professional, I'm using, relying on Andrew Abbott's definition of profession, which includes that the organization is the master or the steward of a domain of expert knowledge, that the organization is responsible for taking care of its own in terms of determining who's in the profession and who is not, who's the military certifies itself largely with oversight from society. But largely the military decides who gets promoted, what the requirements are for promotion, what the requirements are for selection for certain requirements, determines, you know, who does what. It's largely an internal body, very similar to law and medicine. And the measure of merit for professions is effectiveness. And the idea is that militaries exist to provide a professional service, which is defense of the nation. And then the last part, preparedness. Now, preparedness is very simple and straightforward in terms of the military has to be prepared to do something at a given time. Like all first response, you know, unlike the commercial sector, private sector organizations provide their goods and services on a fairly recurring basis, and they can thus measure themselves fairly accurately in terms of their sales and in terms of the revenues that they generate, etc. Whereas in military, like police, like fire, the readiness is a little bit more abstract because it's dependent upon the national security situation. So like in police, the police is prepared to fight crime. What's that dependent on? What is enough for to provide that service? It depends on a preponderance of crime within a district. It's not determined by the police. If there's less crime, then you can do with a smaller police department. In military organizations, it's even further abstracted because the risks and the threats and whatever are mostly external to the nation and therefore requires a significant amount of analysis and risk assessment to determine what does the military need to be prepared for and for when. Is it expected that a particular adversary is going to strike immediately, or is this something a little bit more on the horizon, which is challenging, naturally challenging. Now, with those characteristics, I just want to point out that there are paradoxes just among any pairing of those four characteristics. Public sector and professional, you're pitting essentially a public sector bureaucracy view that values efficiency over the professional view that values effectiveness. And effectiveness is at any cost. I mean, when you really get down to it, the doctor who is serving you, if you need the doctor to help you overcome a disease or overcome some really bad condition, cost doesn't necessarily enter into the equation. I mean, it's obviously it's part of the conversation, but it's not your driver. You want to get well. If you're looking for legal support, it's kind of the same thing. You want the lawyer to fight for you, and the costs, you worry about those later. Well, obviously, no profession is, or every profession is cost informed. You can't ignore cost. But you can understand how, in the ordinary course of things, that the conversation can produce a natural tension between the need to provide effectiveness, which is equated to protecting the national security, versus the public sector side of the military organization, which is to be proper stewards of resources that are provided by the U.S. government. It is something that is routinely synthesized, but that's not to say that the tension is very real, very persistent, and has to be navigated each time that the military wants to exercise some sort of change. Similarly, very large in preparedness can present some paradoxes, because how large is large enough? How prepared is prepared enough? Because obviously you could want to be prepared for everything, but you can't. Not unless you make the organization so large that it becomes complex. And complexity actually can get in the way of being prepared. Because as an organization grows very large, no matter how you slice it, and people have tried to slice this, of course, there is a certain amount of overhead, administration, that grows. And so if you grow an organization larger so that it can be prepared for more things, the administration means that, or the added administration means that, the costs become really huge. And so then there is a natural tension that the size of the organization against what you're preparing for, how much is enough. So you have some of these types of tensions that are inherent, that are persistent. Then the question becomes, how can you do transformational change? I mean, change, just for these kind of reasons which I've given, if you have these sorts of persistent tensions in any organization, there's no question why change is hard. There's no question why change can ultimately seem like it doesn't succeed. And the question I almost have to ask is, well, did the change effort not succeed? Do change efforts actually achieve maximum amount of benefit, given that they're synthesizing inherent tensions within the organization? And even if it falls short of the ultimate goal, the ultimate vision, maybe in some cases good enough is good enough, and maybe the 70% failure rate kind of belies the truth. Because here's the other thing, is that because these tensions exist, it is always easy to declare failure. It is always going to be easy for somebody to say the solution was wrong, the solution was short, because all you have to do is stand on the other side of the tension. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.